Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hey everyone, it's your host Tim Rutten here. Today, I'm happy to share that we're going to have the first episode of our two-part series with banking titan Jim Marrouse. You might know Jim from his many, many projects in the industry, including the financial brand, the digital banking report, and of course, his incredible podcast called Banking Transformed. In today's episode, Jouk and myself will talk with Jim about the state of banking in the US, as well as how you can move from risk avoidance to risk management. We'll explore how to become your customer's primary banking relationship and much more. Let's dive right in. Jim, it's very good to see you in the podcast.
Good to see you again. Good to see you both again, in fact.
Likewise.
Let's start with a few numbers, Jim, because you go way back in the industry. How long have you been active in this domain?
My entire career. I got out of university in the mid-70s and have been banking in one way or the other, on one side of the desk or the other, my whole career. And it's interesting that banking itself, what we do for a living, hasn't really changed. Some of the challenges actually are the same. You know, we were talking about personalization and direct communication way back in the 70s. We just have a whole lot more tools than ever to get to where we want to go. The digitalization of business and industries in general has made it so the accessibility of doing what we really need to do to make banking better is more available than ever. But we tend to still have some of the same stumbles along the way.
So even after 45 years, that is still a topic to tap into, Jim. We're going to explore today what where we are at this moment in time in the industry. Also, you've been connected to Jouk already for many years. I believe 15 years ago, you met for the first time in London. So that's also way back when.
Way back, yeah.
Way back. So let's have a bit of a view, more of an informal dialogue on what we've seen in the past 10, 15 years. And maybe if it's okay with you, Jim, to kick off. By the way, for those audience members that do not know, Jim is a bit of a banking titan in the industry, especially in the Americas region, if I may be so free. Himself hosting the podcast Banking Transformed. Yeah. Right now we're in Banking Reinvented. It's almost the same. Why not? And exactly. And we're going to, first of all, start with a bit of a view of, let's say, Jim's perspective. What is the current state of banking in the United States? What are trends that you're picking up on? And what is the real deal versus, yeah, just a lot of talk, but not a lot of progress?
Yeah, I think right now the state of banking in the United States, as always in a way, is very secure. The banking industry is successful. It has its challenges. Lending is fairly good right now, but there's a lot of nuances to the whole thing. As you see a geopolitical situation across the globe, but especially in the U.S. now, and an economic situation of uncertainty on every front, I think what we see is the use of credit being very high from a historical basis. And yet, you look and say, okay, is this a good news, bad news situation? I think a year or two ago, you'd say it was good news because it kept the economy going. But now there's risk involved because there are a lot of things of, you know, are we going to continue the heyday we've had for a little bit? I think in the U.S., we tend to play a game of catch-up quite a bit when you're talking about digital transformation and modernization of banking. You know, we have a legacy banking system in the U.S. as you do in the U.K., where you end up having a lot of legacy organizations acting almost like legacy organizations. And it kind of gets in the way of modernization because you end up having one foot in the past and one foot testing the future. And I was talking to Tara from your team yesterday, and I said, you know, it's like a ropes course that the longer you hold on to the first rope and don't go to the second rope, the further away it gets. And I think that's what we're in this process of, certainly in the United States where, you know, and I use this in my presentations globally, that changes never happen this fast and will never happen this slowly again. When we've done some research on digital transformation, the bankers that we research say, you know, they're really, really involved in the digital transformation process. They're all really doing a lot of things in that. Yet, their belief of how digitally mature they are, only 20% or even less than 20% believe they're in a good state. So, and that has not changed much over the last 3 years. And I think it's because the goalposts keep on moving down the field and we're playing a game of catch up. The train has left the station. We're trying to catch up. The train's going faster and you only have so much time. Now, the good news is, and we'll be talking about this, is the solution providers continue to step up in a way that we've never seen before. It can be the minor solution providers, let's say the people that fix the new account opening process, or it can be a company like Backbase that helps transform the entire core. The reality is the solution providers have never been stronger as an entity to help organizations modernize their banking environment to go forward. The challenge in the United States and some other regions is bankers tend to have challenges of getting out of their own way. You know, when you have success, it's hard to embrace change. In your personal life, it's hard to take what the doctor tells you if you're feeling healthy. But when the doctor tells you we have found a problem, it's amazing how change can happen. And I think the financial industry overall is embracing what's going on. I mean, AI brings a whole new element of awareness. You know, we're going to be talking about this also. But, you know, you look at Gen AI, that's only November of 2022. That is not even 3 years ago. And yet it's taken over the entire industry. In fact, even beyond our industry, to make it so it makes it even more possible for the smallest organization, the most modest organization, to do things that the biggest organizations used to be their only, they were the only ones who could do it. So I've thrown a lot of things out there. I think that we're seeing the most movement of proactivity and modernization in the biggest banks and actually in the smallest banks. And I think in the mid-sized banks where you have really a strong base of legacy leadership, that's where you get into a little problem. And I think leadership ends up being the difference between who uses the technology that's available well and those who just implement it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. So why is it slow? The goalpost is moving. People need to get out of their own way. Maybe they need an upgrade or a refresh of the leadership. If we look at the audience here, maybe specifically in North America, but also maybe globally, any recommendations you could share with them of things that work that could help them to catch up faster or to accelerate their transformation?
Boy, you know, it's why there's two podcasts here on the show today that have close to the same name. Because if everybody was doing what we told them that it works to do, we probably wouldn't have to do the learning sessions. But in reality, I think what I see is those organizations that realize that processes are broken, and I take it to the very core. So I keep on referring to the new account opening process that most organizations really want to get to the 3 to 5 minute period that makes it so that you can do it on a mobile device without any problems at all and stay on the mobile device to do it. And yet those organizations that sell the tools to be able to do it run into the buzzsaw when they get into the organization after the sale is made and the financial institution says, I still want to use the government ID. That is a broken process that has been improved tremendously through digital insight that's available across the data points to give you even better security than a government ID would. You know, we've the challenge is the person that owns that part of the process within the financial institution feels at risk when we're talking about AI, when we're talking about digitalization. We need, and Tara and your team brought up really well yesterday, we need strong communication within the industry and within organizations to say, your job does not have to be at risk just because we're modernizing. We want to bring you along in the process. It's not that hard. In fact, we're going to make your job more rewarding when we take generative AI or AI in general and take away some of the processes and make them better. It doesn't mean we have to release you. And globally, I think the biggest challenge we have from a geopolitical standpoint is people and organizations being worried about being disrupted or being completely upheld, you know, losing your job, losing your career, when it really doesn't have to be that. You know, the AI and those tools can actually make your job more rewarding. And until we make people secure in where they are, moving forward gets really tough. I'm sure your organization sees this better than anyone, that you think you have a tremendous sale, And then you get in the organization and you're realizing there's friction because people weren't involved in the decision. And they, in their minds, have a vested interest in keeping things the same. They're not trying to kill the process, but they don't really want to move it forward either.
No, I think spot on. That's the biggest obstacle we see. So if we look at like maybe the mindset and the advice could also be like, okay, if you decide then to do this, you know, with whomever you execute this, like, but how do we encourage people to say, okay, then let's also reimagine the way. The other part is that what would you recommend people to say, like how to kind of embrace this? In a way, it's risk, Jim, right? People think like there's job security, all of those things. Like, so you and I, we all can easily say, oh, embrace it, all these new beautiful possibilities. It's a certain, let's say, personality profile that loves it. There's plenty of other people, maybe that also correlates with banking, that don't have, per se, that mindset.
Well, it's the difference between risk avoidance and risk management. I was hired in banking at the beginning of my career saying risk avoidance. I had to stay in the teller station until I balanced. And there were times I took money out of my pocket to make it so I balance so I could get out of there. And the next day, I end up putting the same money back in my pocket because I just counted wrong. But it was risk avoidance. At some point, we have to say, at what level is that risk management more important? You look at the lending realm and you say, you know, at what point do you start taking B and C loans, maybe at a smaller amount, to be able to serve a broader audience? You know, it gets down to that. But until you get to a risk management mentality, until you get into an innovation mode that says we want to change what we do to make it better for our customers and for our employees, we're not going to move forward. And it sounds simple because we all are involved in change management organizations and in a personal way embracing change. So it's hard for us to understand why people don't do it. And I also, you know, I think we have to, from a communication standpoint, bring the people in that may be the hurdle. So bring compliance in, bring legal in, bring the IT department in, bring the people that may, whose jobs may be at risk in their minds, and satisfy that. Because when you do, and when they're part of the solution, they all of a sudden feel empowered and they will move the organization forward with you as long as they realize they can be part of it. I mean, fear's there everywhere. And I think people nowadays, especially in the last 2 years after COVID, but during the beginning of what I'm going to call the financial disorientation, is that in our own daily lives, we're scared about what's going on. You know, we can just look at the political situation globally and say, we don't like to talk about it, but it stays in our minds. So when we go into the business world, we have a burden already in our mindset outside of the business world that, you know, you wonder why you get into a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden goes off the rails. You said, what prompted that? Well, it could have been something that happened 2 days ago that had nothing to do with the conversation. I think it's human nature we have to think about nowadays. And you know, with your organization, when you're talking about major change, when you're talking about reinventing the core, the back office, what we've done forever, that's changing what has been the foundation from the beginning.
Yeah. What we've also seen in the U.S. specifically, if you look at change, like a digital transformation has been there for a long time. So somehow we've been through it, but we basically can also kind of, we're still early days in a way, if I may say so. Jim, in that distinction, like, what's your view on kind of modernizing the core versus modernizing that middleware layer so you have access to basically any fintech, any core, and then kind of addressing the channel layer where you basically interact with your customers, where you service, where you sell? Like, any views on the momentum in these different layers or any comments from your point of view?
We had a conversation 2 years ago about how important the customer experience was, but how it really, you had to fix the core to be able to really honestly make this happen. I had an interview with head of financial services for Accenture about a month and a half ago, and their findings found that, you know, overall, as J.D. Powers found, almost everybody ranks their mobile banking experience high right now, but there's no differentiation. And there's no differentiation because we're all still working with a traditional banking core, and I'm saying all in a quote marks because not everybody's working with that. But I think financial institutions overall now, because of solution providers such as your organization and others like it that do things in different ways, organizations now realize you can't move forward and be resilient and flexible unless you modernize your core in some way, shape, or form. And you may want to implement it on a line of business area or whatever else, but until you fix the foundation, you can't really move forward and make your experience differentiate. I think it was 7 years ago, I talked to a gentleman that worked for a major financial institution in Poland, and they took upon themselves to say, we're going to offer our entire customer base a line of credit. We don't know what amount, but we're going to offer it to everybody and make it so they can access it on their mobile device. That was a major breakthrough to make it so that their organization had to think about credit in a different way. It didn't have to be at $1,000 open line of credit, but for some people, $100 open line of credit to be able to avoid an overdraft, to be able to pay a bill, a utility bill at the end of the month, and then pay it back, but to be able to access with a simple click of the button and to be able to hit another button to say, I need more. It opened up the game for them. What is amazing to me is the few organizations have anything like that today. And I'm going, that would seem to me to be the best customer wellness tool you could possibly give is give immediate access to some kind of credit with a push of a button. You can get more if you need, but also from a loyalty standpoint, why would I leave an organization that gave me even $100 if where I wanted to go to, because I was upset with something, wouldn't give me that same $100, but they didn't have the legacy relationship to build that. So I look at things like that. And I look at the fact that until you modernize the core, you will not be able to adjust to the transaction, to the difference in the marketplace. I mean, just look at the last 2 weeks in the financial markets and all the variations that have happened, and you feel good, you feel bad, you feel terrible, you don't know where anything's going. Well, when you look at a financial institution, their core has to be able to adjust to that. They have to adjust interest rates. They have to adjust the service they offer. If they're really going to look at personalized solutions for their customers, they have to spin on a dime.
For the sake of the audience, I think what I see is that the word core modernization, I think very often people immediately think in just one scenario, and that is just let's rip out the legacy core and let's replace that core with a new core, right? And I think that is just one scenario. I also see a second scenario, because you have to go back, like, what's the problem? The problem is exactly what you described. You need to have that agility in your value proposition towards your end customer segments, right? You want to kind of make combination. You want to aggregate different value components. So the second scenario, I think, if you talk about core modernization, could also be hollow out the core. And what I mean with that is that you can say, okay, your core can stay. Your legacy core can stay. It can just act as the ledger. Like, why do open heart surgery over there? Like, but why not kind of introduce a separate layer where you can do product and pricing? So that's where you can actually manage the different variations of the products you have, the different value propositions per product, like the attributes per product, and you can do relationship-based pricing. So we see that happening more and more with our clients, where you say, like, why spend money on replacing the legacy ledger? You know, it's fine. If you don't have any performance or security issues, it's cool, but let's focus on the areas of the core where you need to have that agility, to your point. Would you see that differently?
I agree fully that everyone has to look upon it in a way that feels comfortable to them. I mean, you're seeing it. You probably have 5, 6, 7 different variations with your clients on how they view, how they want it. There are some organizations that say, I'm now ready to do rip and replace. We're tired of doing this in piecemeal fashion. That's going to be a longer process. It's not something for everybody. Yaku, we talked about before the podcast started that, you know, that was the way you originally built the company, was on, I'm going to call it, it wasn't really a rip and replace thing, but it was buying it all. And it's hard for people to embrace, but it was great when people did. Now we have different variations. We have fix my deposit core, fix my lending core, small business. Maybe I'm doing parallel cores. I look at WeBank in Shenzhen, which I visited back in 2020. They have 4 core systems running at once on parallel platforms in the cloud. And they're doing innovations rapid 17-day innovation cycles for major changes, because they don't have to change everything in their core to do it. They're running test cycles. They're running everything. And, you know, getting back to risk, their customer base is massive because most of their customers were built on simply financing the mobile phone, and they have that mobile phone down to a science as far as risk and reward, because they can tell by the transactions you do and where your phone is compared to the person itself, how likely is that person going to be not real? And that's all they have to do. They don't have to make each person profitable. And again, it's looking at how do you look at the flexibility of doing banking differently? You know, our biggest challenge globally, you know, and with some differences in Central America and in some and Africa countries and India, is that we continually define banking the way we've always defined it, looking at the customer that has this much loan, this much deposit. Their primary financial relationship is the checking account. Guess what? I have a 27-year-old son. He has never touched a check in his life. He's never had a check in his life. He has a core financial institution, but if you ask him, what is his primary financial relationship? It's Venmo and his either Chase or Discover card. It has nothing to do with a checking account. Now, it's all transactional, but the reality is everything revolves around the way they transact. And yet the bankers tend to continually look at that the same way. Plus, they'll look at their relationships and they look at their customer base and they go, we're not losing our customers. And I'll go, I agree thoroughly. And when I do a big event, 200, 300 people, I ask, and they're all bankers, so there's a bias here, but I ask, how many of you have closed a major primary financial relationship in the last 5 years? And virtually nobody raised their hand. I ask, how many of you have opened a brand new relationship with a financial institution, either traditional or non-traditional, in the last 2 years? And everybody raised their hand. I said, look around the room, because you're getting comfortable that you think you have the same customers you've had that are loyal, that you have attrition that's very low. The bottom line is every one of your customers are opening multiple accounts at various institutions that are solving a specific problem better than you are. You know, in the U.S., I have an Acorns account for my savings. I have a SoFi account and a Robinhood account for my investments. I have an Ally account for my car loan. And every one of those are important, but make it so that my primary financial institution's relationship is less important. And that is because those organizations' cores are not so flexible to offer the services that I'm looking for today.
Spot on. I think so. Maybe first, digital transformation. The last 10 years, what have we been doing? Basically, we are able now to do a servicing mobile app, right? You can see your accounts. You can do a transaction. Maybe you can download an e-statement. That's pretty much what we call digital transformation, but it's a basic servicing app. So let's look at the next 10 years. Like maybe the rules of the game are changing. Like to have your opinion. Like one of the things we now see is that, like, okay, we've got this one-size-fits-all mobile app. Like, why not transform that into a tailored value proposition where we say you're in this client segment, I can take a payment capability, a checking capability, an investment capability, an insurance capability, and I can combine that into something that is relevant for this client segment, like family with children. I think the technology today is completely there. I also think this is not dependent on the core, because you can live with multiple cores. You can now aggregate from an insurance fintech, a headless investment fintech. You can basically curate those value propositions. But as long as you have the install base, you've got the brand and the trust, it's all about creating a tailored value proposition. So it's basically about orchestrating and assembling these things in a relevant proposition for a particular client segment.
Well, and also it doesn't have to be within the same organization, you know, in the future world. In addition, when we're talking about financial wellness, when we're talking about personalized recommendations, when we're talking about really moving from an experience to an engagement platform, you know, most financial institutions right now say, I've got to up my engagement. You know, I have two relationships, primary banking relationships, but I don't transact with them ever. I'm transacting through Amazon. I'm transacting through my Acorns account. I'm transacting through PayPal for my business. The reality is, bring those all together. And unless you do that, to your point, We can't even think about agentic AI. We can't even think about real personalization. I will never, you know, I know that my accounts at Wells Fargo and PNC, I know they know everything about me. And I keep on saying this in my podcast. The problem is they never show me that they know me. And the reality is they never offer me any recommendations on how to do banking better. They never look at me and say, by the way, Jim, you have transactions. You're transferring money between one of my, between PNC and Wells Fargo twice a month. And you're writing a check to do that by taking a picture of a check, because one of my relationships doesn't talk well to the other part. And no one's ever fixed that. They know I have a mortgage and I have an auto loan coming out every month. Why aren't you offering me something better? Because you know what I do. The problem is, it gets back to your point earlier, it's risk avoidance. They're afraid of making a mistake about what they'll say to me, as opposed to saying the value proposition of, even if you make a mistake, but if you get it right 9 out of 10 times, 8 out of 10 times, you're not doing something without my permission. You're offering me something that you think makes sense based on what I'm doing or my balance or whatever it is. I'm going to give you that because I'm no longer making the decision based on how much I pay out. I'm basing it on value. Why do I pay? I keep on saying, why do we pay almost $150 a year for Amazon Prime? And everybody does it. It's because they haven't messed up, you know, and they use my data. They offer me things on the app that say, you may want to buy this. They don't make me search very far down the line for things. If I say I want to buy if they see I'm looking for tennis shoes, they kind of know what kicks I'm going to buy and what colors I'm going to buy because I bought them already. So don't give me everything. You know, give me the kind of things I've done before. But to your point, you know, until we bring this together, until we bring the relationship together in one way or the other, we're not really going to be able to help the customer. And then, just like in open banking in my world, the customer does it themselves. So right now, I have a great open banking relationship that I built. I built my own open banking relationship. Let's say a vendor comes out there and becomes a great agentic AI financial management company, and all they need to do is access my different accounts to tell me what I should do next, then the financial institution has lost all power. They're simply a money warehouse, as Ron Shevlin would say. You know, the opportunities are endless right now. The risks are far beyond, I think, anybody has ever imagined, especially with AI out there. And, you know, Tim, you started the conversation, you've lost control of it since. But one of the things I know you wanted to talk about was around AI. And while we're talking a lot about personalization and AI, at least in my experience, I'm still seeing a vast majority of organizations simply using it for efficiency and for cost reduction. The place where, and for risk management, the place where financial institutions feel the most comfortable. They feel really comfortable in cutting costs, you know, taking away risk, which is very important. But when it comes to the personalization, the thing we love talking about, it gets risky because all of a sudden you're afraid you're going to talk to me about diapers and I'm a 70-year-old man. You know, I'm sorry, that's not a good correlation. It may be a good sell, but that's not what I'm talking about. But I, you know, you mismatch things and you have to understand the customer, because even in my household, my wife and I bank entirely differently on the same account, you know, with the same checking and same savings account. We bank entirely differently the way we want to communicate, what decisions we make, who we want to talk to, what kind of engagement we want. We need the data, and we need the foundation, the core, to be able to implement these modernized solutions that basically I'm getting at my fast food outlet, where they can pre-tell me, oh, do you want to order the same thing you did last time? Or at the retailer, or at the whatever you want to go to. My GPS system on my car. I mean, it no longer tells me where I've been. It tells me where I'm going, and it also tells me how to avoid the challenges of traffic and how to pick up my Starbucks on the way or how to stay at a Marriott hotel, my Uber ride continues to offer me things beyond the ride.
So just stopping you there, you've got a gazillion fantastic examples, but I want to stretch it a little bit. Because so far, you're now really focused on saying, hey, that experience needs to be at a certain level with agentic. Certainly, there's going to be a moment in time that there's an FI that brings it all together and indeed leverages AI to bring it all to the next level. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.